Welcome to the podcast version of MGO Radio 5 to 7 on WTKA 1050 AM. If you call in now, nobody will answer you, so don't do that unless you like wasting your time. Had a bit of a hangover for the podcast.
You know, I thought there was just some, you know, prospector that you grabbed off the street. You had a very gravelly voice.
You did sound like a talking gravel truck.
I did. It's a lot of water has been consumed since the podcast was recorded.
That's good. This time, for a change, it was a happy hangover.
However. It was. That was celebratory drinking.
Because Michigan
is a new experience.
Michigan annihilates BYU 31-0. BYU scrapes over 100 yards of total offense in the last drive of the game. A complete destruction of a very legitimate Power 5 team that I don't think we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, not only have we not seen a game like that from Michigan in a while, BYU has played a row of quality opponents, and nobody has come close to shutting them down the way Michigan shut them down.
Exactly, and while they had, you know, a couple of fortunate victories, they were still within punching distance of both Nebraska and Boise before winning that game. And they were driving to win against UCLA down 1 point.
Yeah, and they were moving the ball against all of those teams. And suddenly Tanner Mangum could not do anything against Michigan. And that was not, I mean, there are the caveats about he's a freshman. No. He's just coming off his Mormon mission that, you know, you do expect him to look rattled when he goes and faces a good defense. But that was a completely different guy from the guy I saw play against Boise State and UCLA.
Well, it was interesting because you did the FIFO film segment that we do on the Boise State game. And in that game, he had the two huge plays where he broke the pocket and threw it 70 yards downfield. And Michigan simply didn't let that happen.
Yeah, I mean, they were sticking two safeties deep. I mean, they kind of had the defense set up where there was not going to be much of an opportunity to hit things over the top unless somebody really blew a coverage, because the front was playing so well. They could afford to kind of just hang back with their two safeties and not let anything over the top. And that was something that other teams, when they went against BYU, they either had enough trouble with their running game or there was enough stuff opening up underneath for Mangum that they couldn't play in the parking lot with their safeties the way Michigan was. And also the cornerbacks were playing so well that there was not much opening up in front of the safeties anyway, that it was a defensive effort that nobody else has been able to put together against BYU, freshman quarterback or no.
No, and for that kind of complete domination, you have to be able to use guys in the area of strength and still get away with having fewer guys in the area of weakness. And Michigan played most of this game in a dime, often had five and a half, six guys in the box, and BYU rushes for 2 yards a carry. I mean, you saw Jabril Peppers kind of play linebacker for big chunks of this game, and you saw everybody on the defensive line, but I think especially Ryan Glasgow, beat up their guys on one-on-one blocks so frequently that Michigan could get away with two deep safeties most of the day in an era of college football where that is unheard of.
Yeah, I mean, you had Glasgow doing that kind of work up front, and then Mo Hurst, his sack came on a three-man rush where he's coming from the nose. That was a performance from the defensive line that, I mean, I think you have to go back to 2006 to find anything even close.
I think you do. And we saw that defense look elite for 10 weeks, 11 weeks, and then it all kind of started coming down when the starters went out against Ball State. Michigan gave up a big lead and had to put the starters back in. That kind of gave you an indication that they had two corners and then not very much at all past that. The last two games of that season, they give up 42 points to Ohio State. They give up 36 to USC in the Rose Bowl, and that's only because Pete Carroll didn't tell his offensive coordinator to never run the ball in the first half. He did that at halftime. And what looked like a 97-level defense kind of came crashing down.
Yeah, and it, I think it's safe to say it was because of their lack of modernity in terms of just that was not a defense set up to defend
right.
wide open passing offenses. And this defense is completely different.
Yeah, if you put two wide receivers on the field against that defense, you were dead. If you put four, that defense was matching up Chris Graham against guys who were going to be first-round NFL draft picks. So that didn't work out very well. But if you look at, okay, how do future opponents attack this defense? It's not there because you have now with the two guys on the outside playing very well, Clark and Stribling, you've got those two guys. And then you have Jordan Lewis playing slot corner in this game and Peppers being able to cover anyone who you could possibly want underneath. That is an amazing strength. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a Michigan secondary that feels this deep and good.
Yeah. And it's been a revelation really to see the play of Stribling and Clark just, I mean, that was a huge question mark heading into the
yes.
season. You really don't know what you're going to get from those two guys. And I think it's safe to say we were all just kind of hoping for average out
yes.
of that position.
Yeah.
And those guys are playing well above that at this point. The number of routes that are getting driven right into the sideline where there's just nowhere to put the football. I mean, both Stribling and Clark are doing it. They both made good plays on the ball. Stribling had the one in this game that went right through his hands,
yeah.
unfortunately. But he was there to make the pick. His hands just disappeared from reality for
we're
a brief
working
moment
on it.
Of time.
We're working on it.
He's getting better there.
Yeah.
But just to see the progress of those two, I mean, it makes you really appreciate the coaching that they're getting this year.
We should throw in a caveat, is this was a really good matchup for both those guys.
Yes, they got to go against tall guys who were not necessarily super quick.
Right.
And that's something that they can stick with.
If, you know, they go up against Leonte Carew, whoops. That won't be happening.
No.
If they go up against a smaller, quicker guy who's maybe 6 foot in the Will Fuller mode, which I don't know if there are any of those guys in the league.
I mean, you got Michael Thomas, who's an interesting guy at Ohio State. But other than
Thomas
that,
is kind of in that same
mold. He's taller, yeah. But he's more athletic than the BYU
guys.
He is.
He definitely is. But, you know, it's not quite there. We've seen Clark get beat on some slants and that kind of thing. So I don't know if they're going to be as dominant as they were in this game against guys who use their quickness more than their height. But in those situations, maybe you're not in a dime package. You know, maybe you're putting Peppers on that guy or you're matching up Lewis.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine in the Ohio State game, Jordan Lewis is going to draw the Michael Thomas assignment.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is that they were not really doing matchups previous to this game. But in this game, they put Lewis in the slot for the first time all year because it's like, why don't we put him on Mitchell Juergens, the slot guy?
Yes.
And let the big guys take the big guys. And that's a pretty obvious change, but I just feel with that and then the two deep safeties, having the confidence in your front six to be able to go nerf the run game, you know, that is an adaptation that I'm not sure every staff that we've seen in the past decade or so make.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, you know, UNLV, they didn't really have to do much at all, but we've seen like multiple distinct game plans that they're able to put out utilizing different personnel groups and it's all working at this point.
Yeah. We've barely seen James Ross, and I think James Ross is a pretty good player.
Yeah, he's seen like an all-conference honorable mention caliber linebacker if he gets enough snaps, which I don't think he's going to this year to be able to make that, but he's good.
And one of the concerns that you have when you have a defense like this is that, okay, what happens when they go up against Minnesota? What happens when they go up against Michigan State? Well, they just bring in Bolden. They bring in Ross, they bring in Gedeon, and they have a 4-3. And you have an 8-man front with Peppers lurking around, and it's like, can they defend the running with that? I think so.
I think so. I mean, the area of the defense that is now perceived as the weakest is the three senior linebackers.
Yeah.
And that's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. I mean, Hurst in this game came through big time. He was making promising plays in the first three games, and this is one where it's like, if you told me he was the starter, I would be like, okay. But if you told me Ryan Glasgow was the starter, I'd be like,
that is also okay.
That is also okay. I mean, really, the only kind of holes we've seen since the opener, when I think Mario Ojemudia was put in space too much to be effective, is that, you know, Willie Henry hasn't blown up. He got cut a little bit against UNLV and didn't play a whole lot, and he hasn't had the same kind of impact in the backfield as a number of other guys. But he's still playing well.
Yeah, he came away with a sack on Saturday, and he earned it.
He did. And, I mean, that was kind of one of those things where to get sacks like that, you need multiple guys contributing. So Charlton was rushing and Peppers was coming from the outside. And Mangum had no choice but to go directly into Willie Henry, which is not usually a good choice of action.
Not ideal. But that's what this defensive front is doing, is they're giving you this choice where there really is nowhere to go. I mean, Mangum was breaking the pocket by bailing out pretty much as soon as he got the snap. And otherwise, yeah, there were three or four guys usually pushing their way in and constricting the pocket on him, where there just wasn't anywhere to go.
Yeah, we should talk about how rattled BYU felt. Like, not only was Mangum trying to bust out of the pocket on almost every snap, but they had two bad snaps that I think were caused by the fact that the center was like, what am I going to do with Ryan Glasgow? And then I think there were two or three separate instances where BYU got flagged because their tackles were not close enough to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and they were flagged for that three times, and every time it was because of that.
And I think that's like, you saw a Harbaugh kind of yelling at the beginning of the game, and I think that's probably what he was yelling about.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell that, you know, as soon as Michigan, you know, first couple drives to kind of establish what they were going to do, BYU was cheating off of that line pretty heavy.
They were, and it's just, they made mistakes because Michigan pressured them into mistakes. A lot of the times those procedure things are things that are independent of your play, but I felt like the way that BYU was screwing up was specifically because Michigan had induced it.
Yes, and we didn't see this from BYU in their three previous games this season. We didn't see Mangum look nearly this rattled. He didn't have, you know, all-world pocket presence by any means, but he was standing in there against Boise, against UCLA, and, you know, against two good teams, and stepping up and delivering the ball. And by the fourth quarter, he ran up into the pocket, a totally clean pocket, and then doubled back like he'd seen a ghost, and then ran to the sideline and then turfed a throw across the field. And that was like, that's what we've done to him at this point.
Yeah,
it made sense.
On our MGO blog chat, we compared it to the Homer Simpson. Grandpa Simpson enters, puts down hat, picks up hat, leaves, and you made the gif, of course, today. The other thing that reminded me of was Spike Albrecht doing donuts in the lane.
Yes.
And that's what we had reduced this quarterback to, and like, I'm used to seeing that from Michigan's quarterback. It's nice to see it on the other foot.
Yeah, when a person's looking literally cartoonish. It's a good sign for your defense.
It is a good sign. And then the other thing that the spread really relies on that Michigan has successfully erased from game plans are edge screens. I think we saw one in this entire game.
And Jabril Peppers killed it dead.
And I don't know what they thought was going to happen because they had a guy in press coverage. So that guy is obviously not going anywhere. He got blocked. That meant that Peppers was free. And what is Peppers going to do in space unblocked? He's going to destroy you.
And that is exactly what he did.
I mean, to not have to worry about that aspect. I mean, how many times has Michigan just given up 50, 80, 100 yards on dumb little wide receiver screens?
Yeah, and to be able to neutralize that with essentially just having one guy on the field where you don't have to scheme around it. You don't have to keep an eye out for it. I mean, right. Constant vigilance isn't necessary there for the rest of the defense because they know that Peppers is there.
And the press coverage helps too, obviously.
It does.
So a lot of the yards Michigan has been able to pick up is because corners are playing 8 to 10 yards off. Michigan barely ever does that. If they play off, they're playing 5 yards off. Like, they are not giving you any easy yards. And when you can't get the hard yards, we have something that looks like the BYU game.
Yeah, where they're struggling to get 100 yards at the end. And infuriatingly doing so.
That's probably the best ever, worst thing ever for the week. Is like, oh, they got to triple digits in yards.
I was really, really pulling for it.
It was the worst. And they got it because, you know, they had one run where I think Joe Bolden gave up the edge, the 128-yard run.
Yes.
And then the stribbling phasing out of reality where they get 14 yards on that pass.
That's, yeah, you take those two out, and that is about half of their yardage.
That's incredible. I don't think I've ever seen Michigan do that to anybody, even like Delaware State.
No, to be dominant on that level, I mean, the BYU fans walking around town after the game looked just utterly shell-shocked.
Yeah, and they weren't drinking.
Nope, and they weren't cursing.
What were they saying, Ace?
We got our butts kicked was a common refrain.
Butts.
Tina Belcher over here.
I don't know what that means.
No, you don't watch Bob's Burgers? It's a great show.
No, I tried to watching. I tried watching it once, and I was just like, "This is creeping me out." Because isn't like Archer like?
Yes, it's the same dude who does the voice
right.
of Sterling Archer.
I couldn't deal with it. I was just like,
"It is a transition to make."
And then I was watching Archer, and I'm like, "What is going on?" Because there's a plot point which, spoiler alert, involves Bob's Burgers, and I was just like, "What? What is? I don't even understand any of this."
Yeah, it is. It's a bit of a transition, and if you have to pick one, I think you stick with Archer there.
Yeah,
because Archer's a tremendous show.
Probably. Yeah. Bob's Burgers is just, I think, it escapes me generationally. I'm just.
Yeah, this is where my youth shows a little bit.
Your youth.
Yeah.
Your rapidly fading youth.
I know. Did we have to bring that up?
I like bringing it up because it's like, haha, you too.
Thanks.
I'm your boss. You can't do anything about it. Usually we talk about special teams when we talk about the defense as well, just because that's where it gets lumped in. I would like a special shout out for Jabril Peppers' fair catch ability.
Yeah, he just does not allow leaky yards to go past him, because when you get those punts that bounce, I mean, that can be 5 yards, that can be 20.
Exactly.
And he's not giving that a chance. I mean, he had the one that bounced off his chest and went out of bounds when he was on a dead sprint to the sideline that wasn't too dangerous.
Are we a little worried about that? Or are we like, he's sprinting to the sideline, he knows that if this gets muffed, it's going out of bounds?
I mean, at some point, he might try to make a kind of spectacular catch of a punt. And
he's already done that a few times where it's like, oh, I'm not sure about that one, but he keeps making these catches.
Yeah, until I'd have reason to not trust him on those. I think it's safer to trust him, especially since we have ample evidence from him in high school that his ball skills are just fine.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. I mean, one of them, I think he caught over the shoulder, the one where he managed to escape up the sideline somehow.
Which was, I mean, that should never have happened. He was fielding the ball with his back to the defense and then had two guys pinning him to the sideline and juked both of them.
But that's probably a 30-yard swing there.
Yes.
And all the hidden yardage that Michigan is no longer giving up because opposing punts aren't getting that 5 to 15 to 20-yard roll. In the Utah-Oregon game, I saw a 50-yard punt turn into a 75-yard punt on a pretty fieldable ball. And that was just adding to Oregon's many miseries. But I think of all the special teams things that we've actually seen make an impact in terms of on-field performance, so far that's number one.
Yeah, and that's impressive considering the Michigan's own punting unit has made quite a turnaround as well.
Yeah, they just haven't been able to get that much impact because a lot of their punts are, they get to the 10, right? Like if we saw the pooch punt that we saw against UNLV consistently, not bad.
Not bad at all.
Actually, interesting thing there is we asked the Mathlete, who is our numbers wizard, whether that changes the math for going for it or punting, and it does. So if it's 4th and 3 or shorter, you should still pretty much go in that kind of no man's land. But if you can make sure that you're averaging about the 5-yard line, 4th and 5 is a punt, 4th and 6 is a punt, 4th and 7 is a punt.
What do you do on 4th and 16?
You do not fake it. But as Harbaugh said, maybe they don't have 4th and 16 in Australia.
I don't think they do.
Or maybe they just go off and go rogue because they're Australians.
They definitely do that.
They do that.
We saw that Saturday.
Fury Road, man.
Hey, he broke a tackle.
He did. Yeah, he broke a tackle. En route to 8 yards.
I'm holding on to that.
You're holding on to that.
He broke a tackle.
He broke a tackle. Well done, Ace.
Thank you.
I kind of feel like we need to say some more about Ryan Glasgow.
I mean, anybody who still considers him any form of walk-on.
No, I mean, that's completely out of the question. I made a comparison between him and Mike Martin last week that I thought was a little bit premature. And
then he goes out and has that game.
Yeah, I mean, that tackle for loss where it was a 6-yard tackle for loss on like the one real BYU drive of the day puts him in 3rd and 12 and they exit the field on the next snap. I mean, that's a real game changer. And that's like one of those plays that's a +3 in UFR, and those are hard to get.
Yeah, I mean, because you have to be strong to be able to shed a blocker that quickly, but you also have to be so quick off the line just to get 6 yards in the backfield.
Exactly.
From the nose tackle position. I mean, that's usually, you're usually taking a double or you're having a guy hit you from a weird angle. And for him to be as productive as he has been, because our thing about him before was that he was really steady. He would hold up really well to blocking. He was, he was not a negative. He was definitely a positive, but playmaker would not be how you'd describe him. At this point this year, he's a playmaker at the nose tackle position.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, we don't get to see that much of it because Michigan only had something like 38 tackles in this game, which is amazing.
It's incredible.
But he's already gotten 4, 5, 6 tackles for loss, and he feels like a totally, not a totally different player, but he feels like a much improved player, and he was already pretty good last year. And now he's playing at an all-conference level. Crazy.
Yeah. No, the two deep on that defensive line without Brian Monet, I mean, it's absurd what they've been able to build up there.
It is absurd. All right, we should probably approach a break and then come back and talk about the less amazingly wonderful positive section. That was still pretty good. This is MGO Radio presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. We'll be right back.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you need tickets, and I know you do, you should go to TickIQ. That is T-I-Q, I-Q, just T, and then I-Q, and then I-Q. What they do is they take all the tickets that are listed online, find the cheapest ones, and often you'll have sales. So if you type in MGO blog, 10% off. TickIQ.com, T-I-Q-I-Q.com. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe. Welcome back to MGO Radio, presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. Now we talk about the defense.
We already talked about the defense.
That's right. We always talk about the offense first. Now we talk about the offense, which was still very encouraging. We thought that the second half was a little bit of a letdown, but let's talk about the first half.
Scoring on 5 consecutive drives is good. That's my analysis there. That was also Jim Harbaugh's analysis, so you can't hate on me too much.
All right, we've got like an hour and a half left to show. Let's just dead air that.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Now we're done. Scoring is good.
Muttered, "This is good" every once in a while, like Jim Harbaugh.
So the thing about this game is it was completely crazy that there were two plays in it where you can't decide which one is the better play. You know, I think SportsCenter went with Amara Darbo. I went with Devion Smith.
They were both so good. The Smith run produced more of a visceral reaction from me because
yes.
That was just, I mean, first of all, he disappeared.
He did.
That's pretty crazy. You don't normally see guys disappear. And,
yeah.
And then for him to just get off me, throw somebody down in open field as the crowd's just reaching this apex.
I think it's more of a get north.
There's
an R in there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. There's random consonants that you don't even know exist that get thrown into that when you're executing that much violence on somebody.
But I mean, that's the kind of thing that he brings as a back, and we didn't see it much against UNLV. He had kind of a disappointing day. Ty Isaac came forward and did very well, but that's 2 out of 3 games where he's looked like a very, very good player.
Yes, and the game where he didn't look that great against UNLV was with UNLV going 9 guys in the box and Michigan just running into it because they were basically treating it like a scrimmage. I think it's, especially this week, now that we've seen what the game plan was here, pretty safe to say that they were just keeping a whole lot of tricks in the bag against UNLV. They weren't opening anything up at all.
Absolutely. One thing that I did like from him, other than the big run, is there was one zone cut he made. Or even live, I was like, man, that's a good cut.
Yes.
Where he just takes that one step that convinces the linebacker that he's going outside and then boom, through the gap.
Yeah, just cut right back in inside the tight end. That was, and he gotten a nice gain out of that, too.
It was like an 11-yard play. I thought that he had a couple opportunities to do that in previous games that he missed. And it's kind of nice to see that development. I also thought that his first long run was a nice little bit of patience and popping through the right gap.
He set that one up really nicely, I thought.
And I mean, also, I mean, we saw Henry Poggi and Sione Huma have excellent days as blockers. Michigan lost Joe Carriage for this game, but they still spent so much time with that dual fullback look, and BYU just couldn't handle it. They haven't seen that kind of thing before.
Yeah, and not only have they not seen it, but the quality in blocking from the backs and tight ends has gotten so much better. I mean, from last year, it's, you know, worlds away, and even from game one, I mean, Poggi was having a lot of trouble against Utah, and all of a sudden yesterday, he's looking like a plus blocker in pretty much every phase. To see this kind of week-to-week improvement, I'm still wrapping my head around it, I think, because it's just not something we've seen.
Absolutely. Phone lines are open, 734-998-1050. Let's go to the phones. Don from Sylvania.
Hello, gentlemen. From beginning to end, and it's funny because I look at Channing Stribling. He was recruited, and he's never saw the light of day till now. Now he's playing very good football, special teams. You know, it looks like you know, our team is amped up to play it. Not basically they have to play it. They want to play it. They want to go out and hit somebody. The return guys want to hit somebody. They want to get a good return. How many times last year, for the last couple of years, have we seen teams take it out to the 38, 40-yard line? You can never stop them from getting out. So congratulations to the special teams. I actually enjoy watching them. Number two, I think our punter has intangible yards that we get back as he flips the field. I think that rugby-style punt's going to pay big dividends going down in the rest of the season. Jameel Peppers. But I think Brian Glasgow Saturday created so much havoc on that center that he just allowed everybody else just to get in the backfield. I felt actually sorry for that center. He was just manhandling him. And basically, Brian and the rest of your team, how do you feel we stack up against Michigan State now? And or Ohio State. I think we stack up personally better with Michigan State than Ohio State because they do have a very fast receiver core that likes to get out in space. Problem with them is they just haven't found a quarterback that can actually throw accurately. He usually overthrows them. So I'd like to have your opinion on that. Northwestern is going to be a test. I'm not fearing Minnesota, not after a stellar performance against Ohio U.
No, neither am I. Thanks for the call. I mean, the MSU-OSU question is one that's just it's they look a lot more. We keep saying the word tractable.
Yeah,
someone called us out on it on Twitter. I'm like, yep, that's
fair
good
enough.
Thing.
Yeah.
But those are games that Michigan can definitely win now.
Yeah,
I don't know if I thought that was possible before the season.
No, I mean we even got the surprising revelation that on SB Nation's Bill Connolly, who does their advanced stats, is projecting out the season.
And oh no, don't do this.
I'm sorry, but you know he. Yeah, Michigan is the favorite in every game moving forward by his algorithm. That doesn't mean they're going to win every single game because percentages play into that. It actually averages out to almost exactly a 9-win season. But Michigan, I mean, they get those two teams at home.
They do.
And neither of them has looked as good as expected.
They have not. I mean, Michigan State's been outgained for 3 straight weeks, which is kind of an amazing thing to say about the number 2 team in a country. We won their playing MAC teams and Air Force.
Yes.
Like,
that is shocking.
And Oregon, I guess.
You know,
but Oregon doesn't look so hot right now.
Somehow still ranked ahead of Michigan in the coaches poll. Stack those Utah games up, and I don't know how you couldn't do that.
I don't understand how you can have Utah behind Michigan State either, but they remain number two. I think even Michigan State fans at this point say that that doesn't really feel like a number two in the country team.
No, I mean, they certainly don't look like it.
I mean, they've had difficulty running the ball. They kind of got off the schneid a little bit against Central last week. But Air Force locked them down. They didn't have much success against Oregon after an Oregon bust on like the first snap from scrimmage that was just a 62-yard run. And you're seeing kind of like some holes pop up, and they've been hit with injuries pretty bad.
Yeah, that was good. I mean, because they already had Cody Keeler, their right tackle, who's a pretty quality lineman, out for, I think, the season, out for a while.
He's out for, I think, the year.
And then last weekend, Jack Conklin goes down with an apparent knee injury, and Mark D'Antonio is not talking about it. And
which is probably good.
I mean, that's kind of the state press corps. It takes that as a good sign because usually talks about season-ending injuries. Although with this one, you could see why he'd be hesitant to announce until they're absolutely sure that it would be a long-term thing, because that totally changes the outlook of their offense if he's not there. I mean, that is a first-round quality left tackle. Their offensive line did not look nearly as good once he was out.
Yeah.
And they've obviously already been hit depth-wise because Keeler's gone.
And, I mean, they lost Ed Davis before the season. They lost Vyante Copeland, one of their cornerbacks. It just feels like, you know, a rebuilding year for them.
Yeah, and their secondary was already looking, even while healthy,
yeah,
looking much worse than they had been the last few years.
So even when they were playing these kinds of teams, when their defenses were super dominant, they were doing the kind of things that Michigan's defense was doing. And this year, you know, they're giving up 300 yards to Western. They're giving up 250 to Central.
And these aren't all garbage yards. They're letting these teams kind of hang around a little bit.
So I think Michigan State, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a pick 'em by the time game time rolled around.
Yeah.
Like those lines are going to be moving. Ohio State, I still just don't see it because Ohio State does have a lights out defense.
Yes. And at some point, I still think that offense is going to start clicking. And
yeah.
I mean,
you saw it happen a little bit against Western Michigan where Cardale Jones looked a lot better. Like they're going to figure some things out as the season goes along, and then their talent is going to be too much for just about everybody. I think Michigan can stick in that game. I just don't see him score enough points.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen weirder things in Michigan-Ohio State games with Michigan hanging around against teams they shouldn't. So
we definitely have. All right, back to the offense. Jake Rudock had a bounce-back day. I thought, you know, his first half was savvy, which is something that we expected from him. And we weren't really seeing. I think my favorite play of his was when he came up in the pocket and then just kind of lasered a sidearm pass to Darbo for a first down.
Yeah, that was a Matt Stafford arm angle right there.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that I thought he was really good at when he was at Iowa. Like, he was very good at moving around the pocket and finding the guy 10 yards downfield.
Well, and in this game, he was doing that both with throwing the ball and then the added dimension of him being able to scramble and pick up those yards. He had the two touchdown runs, and those were both just, you know, letting the play kind of play out in front of him. But when Contain was lost and he saw open space, he took it and he could do something with it.
Exactly. And, you know, that's not a huge surprise if you watch him in Iowa. He had something like 250, 300 yards every year once you remove sacks. So we hadn't seen that aspect from him. And when he adds it in, all right, now we're talking about a guy who can keep the offense on the field and just help you move it in a way that we weren't really seeing in the first three games.
Yeah, and I mean, there, you know, he still hasn't played it, I would say, a great game. He missed some open guys in this one. Obviously, on the very first play for Michigan, he had J.U. Chesson for a screamingly wide open touchdown because the defensive back fell over and did not throw it. But he seemed to be, especially in the second half, it seemed like he was kind of playing to keep a clean sheet. He wanted to stay turnover free for
that. Yeah, that's a really good analogy. That's what it felt like to me as well, because, you know, you're in the stands and you can see Jake Butt waving his hand, just being like, I'm open. And he's not getting it as often as he probably should be. Because as we saw in the opener, sometimes you can throw him balls when he's triple covered and it's fine.
Yeah, he'll get it.
He'll go get it. And, you know, there were a couple of waggle plays where I thought his corner route was open. And there was that drag route that got broken up in the first half where Rudock just didn't see it fast enough.
Yeah. Give the defender just enough time to break on.
And I still think there's this element of a lack of comfort with this offense because, you know, yeah, he was in a pro-style offense at Iowa. But as we've seen with the, say, San Francisco 49ers, when you get a Harbaugh offense, it's complicated.
Yeah, the level of sophistication can vary quite a bit between pro-style offenses.
We'll talk more about the 49ers because it's fun, but later in the show. But a step forward for Rudock. I still think that he's working his way into this offense, and I hope we see better from him because, you know, if we get this Rudock against Michigan State, it's a tight game. If we get UNLV Rudock, not going to happen. If we get a better version of Rudock, kind of like the Iowa Rudock against Wisconsin, you know, if he can pull that out against the right teams, Michigan could have a really good year.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably the biggest variable for Michigan's season right now is if Rudock has his games where he's on during the right weeks, then because I don't think that's going to be a constant thing. I don't think we're going to reach some point where over the second half of the season, Rudock looks like an NFL draft pick or anything. But if he's on at the right time, I mean, there isn't a game that looks out of reach anymore for Michigan.
No, certainly not. Phone lines are open, 734-998-1050. Let's go to Mark from Detroit.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Really, really a big fan of you all. Been reading since about 2005. Quick question, though. The staff is awesome this year. What are the chances that, like, everybody returns next year? I know Durkin and Drevno were kind of head coaching possibilities in the future, and Jed Fish has like had a pretty nomadic coaching career. What is the chance that all of those guys come? We can bring the band back next year, and we have O'Corn at quarterback. Thanks a lot. I'll hang up and listen, guys.
I think it's pretty likely that Michigan has the same staff this year that they had last year. I mean, next year that they had this year. Because, you know, Fish had his time as an OC in the NFL, didn't really work out. I think he needs to kind of establish himself as an offensive coordinator before he's going to move around. Drevno has never actually been an offensive coordinator before. He's been a run game coordinator. He's had kind of in the middle job titles, but he hasn't been the OC.
Yeah, and if you look at his role at Michigan right now, I mean, offensive coordinator is his title, but in terms of who's in charge of the offense, I think everybody knows that Harbaugh's the guy there, and Jed Fish also has a pretty big hand in it as well.
Well, but Drevno is going to get bonus points for his work with the offensive line.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and if he wants to move on up, I think he can do that before long. I just think this is a group that next year it should be back.
Yeah, I mean, Drevno is a guy who I think you could be talking about him in 5 years as a really big coaching candidate. The one guy who I think might get attention right now is DJ Durkin.
Yeah, I mean, with what he's done on that defense, with that defense so quickly, and that's a guy who, just with how old he is, you'd want to hire him and get him locked in place if you can as a head coach, I think, as soon as possible.
I still think that's going to be one of those things where, you know, he can be like a Narduzzi here, where he's like, you know what, I'm not going to take the UConn job. I'm just going to hang around. I'm going to be the other half of Harbaugh, and then I'm going to wait for a really plum job to open up, because he can get that job. So if the wrong job opens up, then that would be Durkin watch time. I'm not really seeing it this offseason, because what's going to open up? Does he want the Illinois job? I don't know.
Yeah, that seems like a downward move at this point in terms of your career prospects.
And you do want to see him establish himself a little bit more, I think, if you're hiring. Because at Florida, he had great defenses, but he was under Will Muschamp.
Yes.
So this is his first kind of foray as a defensive coordinator, where he is definitely in charge of his side of the ball. It's going great. But, you know, Terrell Austin last year, Terrell Austin this year, if you're making that hire, I think you're going to want to wait a couple years to see how authentic and how much.
Yeah, with those younger guys, you do want a track record there. And Durkin is building a strong one right now, but it's still in the process of being built. And then the rest of the guys, I mean, they're pretty young, the rest of the staff, too. So, I mean, I think Wheatley down the road is obviously either a flight risk or a guy who's going to move up and get promoted within. Same with the two defensive backs coaches, but I don't see them necessarily bolting right away unless something really opens up.
No, I think that it's likely we'll have this staff for another year. And
that would be very nice.
That would be nice, and then we'll see what happens the year after. And I don't think people are going to be leaving except to move up, because, I mean, if you look at the way things are going right now, it seems like they got it going.
Yeah, and the other thing is, even when they do inevitably have attrition off of this coaching staff, Harbaugh has such an expansive coaching tree at this point that the concerns about filling that back in are just not really there, I don't think.
No, his ability to identify guys and hire them is out of this world. Like, Greg Jackson, I think, is the best example of that, because he was kind of like the assistant to the defensive backs coach at Wisconsin for 1 year. He gets picked up by Harbaugh to go to the 49ers. And all of their defensive back stats, their people who have advanced defensive back stats, are crazy good. And he didn't have, like, lights-out talent, you know? I mean, it was good talent, but it wasn't as good as they played.
Yeah, and Harbaugh identified, I mean, that is a big move up
to
go from assistant DBs coach in college to defensive backs coach for an NFL team.
But he just does it. He finds people, and then they go on to success elsewhere. It's going to happen here, but I don't think Michigan is going to be too bad off for it. And that's a good problem to have, especially because, you know, Harbaugh is eventually going to retire or go back to the NFL, probably the former, I think. But to have an actual coaching tree is not something that Michigan has been able to access. And if DJ Durkin is really successful at a second level school for 5 years, that's going to be a slam dunk hire. And those are nice.
Yes. Yes. When an obvious candidate presents themselves, I mean, we know all too well, that's a good thing to have if you can.
Absolutely. Phone lines are open, 734-998-1050. Let's go back to the phones. Penter in Florida.
Hi, guys. I've been listening a long time, or not listening, but reading the blog a long time. I was watching the first half, and I saw Rudock. He missed a guy opening the flat. It looked like he was a little bit late on the throw, and almost a pick six. But in the second half, after that throw, it was like six or seven plays in a row, he just refused to throw the ball downfield. And that concerns me, because if you're scared to throw the ball 31-0, you know, what are you saying in a close game? I'll hang up and listen.
I think that's a valid concern. Like, we saw Rudock kind of go back in a shell. That was a reputation he had at Iowa that I didn't necessarily see very much of myself when I was watching them play. But four games into this year, I think that's something that you do worry about.
Yeah, because he's missed guys in every game, I would say, at this point. There have been receivers where, I mean, there was the quarter out to Jake Butt on Saturday where he had the space to do it. I mean, it's right there. And even given what I said about Rudock wanting to go interception-free in this game, you still want to see him unleash those and just have the confidence to know that he can make that throw, because that wasn't a particularly tough throw.
No, I mean, he looked really good in the first half, and then, you know, up 31-0 is not the worst time to be conservative. I just hope that, you know, he can adapt enough, like if Michigan's down a touchdown in the second half of a game, where he's going to be like, all right, I've got to go get points. And he kind of did that against Utah. Like,
yeah. No, they did really open it up on those last gasp drives. But
I mean, that throw to Butt is not something where that's a low risk throw, right?
So, no, that's putting it into traffic.
So I think you just got to hope that, you know, he'll be situation aware.
Yeah.
As far as the rest of the offense goes, we obviously saw a lot more of Khalid Hill, especially on one of the most awesome plays I've seen in a long time at Michigan.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
I was so upset they were in a pro set on 3rd and 11, and then that happens, and I'm like, oh, okay, point Harbaugh.
Yeah, the double fake screen. Nobody saw coming, including you and all of BYU's defense.
I just love the fact that they pulled that out. I love the fact that they pulled out a pitch counter, so they kept running that counter, that pitch outside in the UNLV game, and in this game they didn't run it. But when they did run it, they had a counter on that. If Drake Johnson had made the right cut, it was going to be a big game.
Yeah, no, I thought he missed a pretty decent opportunity there. But just to see the counters that were out there and the way that they set up that whole game plan, where it was all, there was a ton of stuff that was based on looks that they'd shown before.
Yeah.
But there was also a lot of new stuff and very little repeats in terms of outside of their very base stuff.
Right. Exactly.
BYU saw almost nothing of what Michigan, it was not anything that Michigan showed against
Miami. I mean, they must have prepped for that pitch because it was Michigan's most successful play against BYU, not BYU, UNLV, and they don't see it.
No.
They just wasted all that practice time. And that's something that I think Al Borges did a very poor job of. He was always running the thing until it had been defensed two or three times, and then he would move on. Harbaugh is anticipating the counterpunch and being like, you're just not going to see that thing that you have a reaction to. And one of the interesting things I saw online afterwards is a guy on a BYU message board, I put this in the game column, who had talked to a parent of the player, and he was like, the kid said, yeah, all the stuff we prepared for, Michigan didn't do. And how great is that to hear? How great is that to hear after years?
Never hearing that at all.
Of hearing, yeah, they did exactly what we expected them to. How great is that?
I mean, it's a difference between this coaching staff and one of many, but
yeah,
probably the primary one.
And this is the thing that I always had a problem with like the other man ball philosophy, which is like, you just have to go out and execute. No.
Coaches have to do that too.
Like, you have to make it difficult for the other team to execute, and the coaches have to play a role in that instead of just calling the same zone stretch on the first play of every game. Not to name names of offensive coordinators in the SEC who have seen their teams lose fourth quarter two touchdown leads twice this year. Not to name names.
Won't say it. We're too classy here for that.
We are too classy. All right. I think we do need to get to a break, though. On the other side, our gimmicky top five list of the day is the most ridiculously fun blowouts we have been a part of. This is MGO Radio, presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Most Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.mo. That's 100years.moe. Ace, how you doing?
Doing pretty well.
This is an ad break in a sports-themed show. What does that mean?
That means DraftKings.
It does mean DraftKings. So what I like about DraftKings is that you're not competing against the house. You're competing against other people. And as we know, other people are often Ohio State fans and therefore not very smart. DraftKings does a great job of projecting values and thus making the games fair. If you're listening to this later this week, the college football contest should be up. But for now, you can go to a free NFL contest for $1 million. $1 million. Just go to DraftKings.com, sign up with the code MGOBLOCK. If you need tickets, and I know you do, you should go to TickIQ. That is T-I-Q, I-Q, just T, and then I-Q, and then I-Q. What they do is they take all the tickets that are listed online, find the cheapest ones, and often you'll have sales. So if you type in MGOBLOCK, 10% off. TickIQ.com, T-I-Q-I-Q.com.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Eufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
So as someone who reads MGOBLOCK, you're probably familiar with the fact that sometimes independent operators are much better than a cookie-cutter corporate operation. And our friend Matt Demarest is one of these guys. So he was working for a retail loan company, just didn't feel like they had the best interest of the customer in mind, struck out on his own, and now he's himself. He's Homesure Lending. It's just him. When I went through the loan process with him, for one, I got a great rate. And for two, I had his cell phone number. I had his email. I had his text. And whenever I needed something, he was on the phone in an instant. So that's not the kind of service you always get from everybody else. So my only real complaint is that Seth got a better rate than I did. But other than that, my experience with Matt was absolutely great. You can talk Michigan football with him, and it will be wonderful instead of the boring conversation you'd have with anybody else. And if you do get a loan with him, he has a ticket deal going on, so two tickets to any football game, any basketball game, and you will have a satisfactory mortgage. Go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog or call 1-855-6-BE-SURE. 1-855-6-BE-SURE.
Sunday, Monday, happy days.
Welcome back to MGO Radio, presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. I am Brian Cook. This is Ace and Better talking right now.
Yes, I'm talking right now.
You're always good when put on a spot.
I know.
There's always that little tiny pause. It's terrible.
Those are the gears turning.
All right, we are going to do our gimmicky top five of the week, and that is the top five most ridiculously fun blowouts. Ace, you're number five.
I'm going with Saturday's game.
Really?
I did not want to. I'll admit there was a bit of a running theme on my list, and I was trying to alleviate some of that. And two games were very obvious. I went and picked one. But the thing about me for Saturday was just that was. I mean, it was just like a. It felt like a 3 hour long celebration of what we had just gone through and then gotten past, and kind of this was the new era now.
Yeah.
And to have that after the last. Really 8 years to see that game. I mean, that was as much fun as I've had. I spent most of the game in the press box covering my mouth because I had this just stupid grin on my face the whole time. And I was laughing after every big play and it was starting to get a little loud. And I was really, it was, you know, I haven't had many games during the Hoke era where I had a difficult time containing myself while in a working press box environment.
Sure, yeah.
Maybe in a different way where I felt like throwing chairs or something, but, you know, never just like joy bursting out of me.
Sure.
So Saturday, just to see everything open up and to see a defensive performance like that, I mean, that's really up there with any defensive performance I've seen from a Michigan team.
It was pretty good. It didn't actually make my list. My number five is very self-serving, but kind of along the same lines. My number five is NFL reporters and especially Football Scoop against bloggers and the Michigan recruiting sites.
That is a strong outside-the-box blowout victory.
Because for the entirety of this coaching search, it was every day somebody else was like, this is never happening. Harbaugh would never leave the NFL. Not going to happen.
But you've heard about the Colts now, man. I mean, they're right in it.
And like Football Scoop, like coming in with things that I know for a fact are completely untrue, doubling down on it, tripling down on it, and then just, you know, retweeting all the things he said during that coaching search whenever, you know, about how he hates recruiting and he's shirtless and the Peru ball. Just his Twitter archive is now a house of gems.
It really is. It's just a living testament to how wrong those reporters were.
Yeah. And I think this is going to go forward, of course. Like, it's already, there's already Colts talk now, which is completely insane.
It is. Which, since Chuck Pagano is not a bad coach.
Well, I mean,
but, I mean, they're having a rough year, but
the craziest thing about the Colts rumors is, okay, Jim Harbaugh just escaped Jed York. And now he's going to go work for Irsay?
No, thanks.
You're going to let the monster back in the cage?
Yeah,
no.
And even if you put aside the whole crazy owner aspect of the NFL,
yeah,
and look at the situation that Harbaugh has got here, he's got about as much autonomy as you could want as a football coach. He is in his hometown.
Yeah.
He's talking about in press conferences about how his children are attending the same elementary school that he did growing up. I mean, it is really hard to imagine Jim Harbaugh after one season going, you know what? Well, that was fun. Good luck with the rest of it. After everything, he would have to be the biggest snake on earth, and I don't believe that's true.
No. Ongoing blowout. Ongoing blowout.
Still happening.
Ace, number four.
2007 Notre Dame. This is why I didn't double up.
Okay.
03 Notre Dame does not make my list. Same score.
Okay.
I know.
Yeah, all right.
2007, you know, first of all, more recent. So for, you know, a person who's still clinging on to his youth like myself, I do have a more clear memory of it. I thoroughly enjoyed watching Jimmy Clausen just get thrown around like a rag doll.
That one sack where it's just
the entire defensive front meets him at once. That was such a fun game. I was actually down the street from Michigan Stadium when it happened. I was at the old neutral zone location in Ann Arbor.
Oh, my God. You were so young.
We had a big screen TV in there while we were recording a Ska album. I managed to get that in. And I was not doing much recording because I was very busy watching that game and freaking out.
The increasingly poor decisions of young Ace Anbender. Oh, my God.
Man, they're not getting much better in my adulthood.
No.
By this weekend.
No. Good God. My number four, also ND 2007.
That's the right place for it, I
it
guess.
It is. I mean, 38-0 against Charlie Weiss. Don't forget the Charlie Weiss factor.
That is true.
Like, 2003 true. Was great, but the Charlie Weiss factor on top of everything else. Like, I remember photoshopping his head on to Wile E. Coyote in the aftermath of that game. This is before I made Seth do all of my Photoshops. it was just a glorious, glorious day.
Yeah, we got to reprise a Yakety Sax highlight reel. I mean, it was beautiful to get that all out there.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it. And especially after what had happened in the first two games.
Yes. Yeah, that is the other aspect of that game that I think should probably be commented upon. Is just we could not have been lower as a group heading into that. And then to have that game, have it come through where all of a sudden there's some hope again for that season. I mean, it's tough to overstate how bad the Michigan fan mindset was heading into that
week.
Exactly.
I mean, and that was kind of like the first indication that we were going to see a season in which, you know, you go beat Tim Tebow in the Citrus Bowl and Carr gets his I'm on the shoulders kind of send off, which was, I think, important for everybody.
Yeah. No, it was great to see him have his kind of final moment of triumph there instead of leaving on a very sour note.
So 2007 Notre Dame game is a mutual agreement. Ace, your number three.
The Elite Eight game against Florida in the 2013 run to the national title game. Just the Nick Stauskas reigning in five threes from the exact same spot.
Billy Donovan has not scouted Nick Stauskas?
Apparently not. And then in the second half, he hit one more from the left corner but had to step around a guy to do it. And when he hit that shot, I lost it.
Where he was just like, well, I could not take this, but
I'd so much rather take it. Because that was a really quality Florida team.
It was.
And
Michigan was coming off that Kansas game.
Yes.
I don't think I could have taken another close game.
No, I mean, it was a relief from just like all of our nervous systems got a break for a little bit. And but also just to validate, because Kansas was a great team, but Michigan had to obviously claw their way through that one.
Yeah.
And then to go up against a Florida team where it seemed like that was going to be another tough game and to just blow them out of the water, I think that's when everybody really believed, like, they could really do this.
Yes. And they almost did.
They came really darn close.
My number three is Judgment Day 1997, Penn State 34. Wait. Incorrect.
Close.
Michigan 34, Penn State 8. I mean, going into this was like, is Michigan this good? Penn State has Kerry Collins. They are the best offensive team in the country. Michigan hadn't had a whole lot of success against Penn State the few years before that. And they go into Happy Valley, a rabid Happy Valley, and they blow the doors off. The capper is Woodson going down the slot untouched for a touchdown. Dominance that you have not seen against a top five opponent before or probably since puts Michigan number one in the polls. That game is probably why they managed to stay ahead in one of the polls in 1997.
Absolutely. Or Tom Osborne would have had two parting gifts.
That demolition got Michigan its national championship and happened against some of the most lovely people I can stand to think about. It only gets better in retrospect because I think their defensive coordinator was
not a great guy.
Not a good dude. Yeah. So 97, Michigan, Penn State. Ace, your number two.
Is 97 Michigan, Penn State.
All right. Number two is the Florida Elite Eight game.
Well, we got through that portion pretty quickly.
We did. Ace, your number one.
2006 Notre Dame.
Also my number one.
I mean, it was just so fun to start off with a pick six and then just the series of hilarious things happening to Brady Quinn throughout that entire game.
Was the just, O wide open.
Mario
Manningham is just three touchdowns in that game, just completely off the hook. And in the aftermath, we get the Brady Quinn. I put together the Brady Quinn for Heisman video, which
I thoroughly enjoyed.
Which was good. It was very entertaining with the Yakety Sacks. And then next year we had the Yakety Sacks one. And then the year after, House Rock built got us back.
Yep.
Deservedly.
Yeah. But might have asked for that one.
After the 2005 season, which was the first time that Michigan had ever been exposed to anything like what we saw over the last 7 years, the 7-5 year, ton of close losses, is Michigan a national program even anymore? Michigan comes out against number two Notre Dame at Notre Dame and just blows their doors off.
I think my favorite image of that is the kind of foreshadowing to the Alan Branch, Anthony Morelli hit where Sean Crable knocks over Brady Quinn and Quinn's got about half of the field stuck in his helmet.
Yes. And there's like the still picture where it's just Crable over the fallen corpse of his foe like he's a lion.
Yeah. And Quinn's kind of staring down the field like, what is happening to my life?
I think this one had a little bit too much agreement.
I know. Well,
it's more fun when
we need to get some more blowout victories, and then we'll be able to have a longer list here.
That's a good point. When we go for the negative stuff, it's always like, oh, I didn't think about that other horrible thing that happened.
Also, I think the way our minds work is kind of playing into this a little bit.
Well,
but we did have more terrible things than blowout wins over
I think these are pretty indisputable. Like, I can't imagine a Michigan fan that doesn't have the Florida Elite Eight game on there.
Unless they don't follow basketball.
I mean, yeah, I guess. No. I was trying to think of other things, but like, I mean, if you blow out anyone other than Notre Dame, does it really mean as much? And Michigan hasn't blown out Ohio State in an awful long time, so it's just like...
Yeah, and I mean, the other ones I was honestly considering were basketball games during that 2013 season where Trey Burke just made people look silly, like the road game against Northwestern where it was just a parade of ridiculousness. Actually, the Stauskas game at Illinois.
Yes,
also
I was about
to
say that. Yeah, where it's like 51. I was actually in a sports book in Tahoe. But I was, and there were some Illinois fans, like kind of sitting a couple tables over, and just that.
Did they leave?
No, they didn't, because they had bets on a bunch of games.
Hopefully, not that one.
So they were just looking at it, like, "Oh, you got to be kidding me!" Because Stauskas is just completely out of his mind.
Well, and then he hits that like 35 footer right before halftime and then just mean mugs the entire Orange Crush section. And they can do nothing. I mean, and he turned towards them, I think, like four or five different times that game after hitting ridiculous shots.
What were they saying to him?
I mean, whatever
what
it was.
What could you possibly say?
Bad idea. Do not trash talk Nick Stauskas while he is making it rain in your arena.
I bet that all they were saying is, you're good at basketball, sir. And Stauskas was still getting angry about that. He's got a little D'Antonio in him.
Yeah.
Nick Stauskas
needs to say that he's great at basketball.
All right, these were the gimmicky top five lists. We welcome in Liz Crowe, local bon vivant, woman about town, real estate author.
That too.
She's both of these.
You can combine that. It crosses over. Yeah. It does. Lots of my books cross over that way.
So, you have a lot of experience with soccer, having raised three Division I ladies into the sport. So we thought we'd talk with you a little bit about Michigan's men's soccer team because, I mean, they've had a kind of a little bit of a period in the wilderness, but it seems like they're really turning it around.
They are. They're having a great year. They are number one in the Big Ten after they beat Penn State over the weekend, and apparently number 25 in the nation as of today. So, yeah, they look good. They look good. We support both men's and women's soccer at Michigan. We buy tickets every year and go to as many games as we can. It's hard to fit it in because of my daughter's own soccer schedule.
Sure.
But we go to – it's fun. They're fun to go to. It's a great atmosphere.
They are. I mean, I wish that they weren't during the fall because it's just so difficult for me to like get out there and go to the games.
I know.
But back when they had, you know, Justin Miram, who's now playing for the Iraqi national team, which is a really cool story. I was going to a number of those, and it's a really great environment.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you kind of a nice mix of like the high-end sport and something you care about, but it's like it has a minor league feel. It's really nice.
It does. It's a beautiful facility. There's no doubt about that. And what I really like is we, for example, this year when we went to the women's soccer game versus Central Michigan, on my daughter's club team, they graduated a bunch of seniors, and two of them play for Central. So we brought our own like contingent who were, you know, cheering for Michigan, but yet cheering for Central because we knew the girls on the team.
Sure.
And it was so fun to see. I love to see across the field from where I'm sitting, all the support, like they have their own little band or their own little cheering section.
Yeah, the ultras.
And it's just awesome.
So Michigan has styled their student section over like the Italian.
Right.
Like crazy people with the flares.
I know. It's great, though.
And they're not crazy people, but the name is very.
It's a crazy kind of a sport. People are used to crazy fans. It's just sort of its culture, I think.
Yeah. It's got its own culture, and that's a very cool thing.
Without a doubt.
Good to see them coming through. They had a tie on the road against Maryland, and Maryland, I think, is ranked in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really big step forward for them. They have a couple freshmen on the team who are very exciting, who I cannot pronounce. Ace, you're going to have to look up the guy from Ghana for me and enunciate his name.
Penn State was, I think, 21 when they played them nationally, and then they beat them 2-0, a resounding win in soccer, frankly. It was a really great win.
And
so, Wisconsin, they've got, I believe we're going to go. Yeah, it's this weekend, about 2 o'clock here at home. Saturday.
Saturday,
yeah.
Yep. So before the Michigan game, you can head out there.
That's right. We'll be there. I'll be there. It's a fun sport to support. And like you said, because my daughter's experience with it since she was in second grade, we've been watching soccer from the sidelines a lot of years. It's paid off, thank goodness. Because she's gotten to do what she wanted to do with it, which is she's going to be playing next year at Akron.
Wow.
Which is very exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah. So she's thrilled. And another teammate of hers on her club team is just committed to Akron as well. So they'll be going there together.
That's very cool. Ace, give it to me.
Man, I'm not sure about this. But
that's not how you pronounce it, Ace.
Francis Atuahene?
Oh, that sounds pretty good. So he's Ghanaian.
Yeah,
And he is a very fast winger, very, very skilled, very exciting player.
Right.
And you're kind of seeing that Chaka Daly is beginning to bring in these kinds of guys. So,
They're fun to watch. They're a fast-moving team.
Yeah, and the nice thing about soccer is that as the skill level goes down, sometimes the game opens up a little bit.
Yeah.
So, college soccer is not, Lionel Messi, but there's a lot of action in it.
There is.
Yeah.
There is, and more now, I think, because more and more more athletic people are committing to playing it instead of some other sports. where they would have in the past.
I want a dollar for this segue from you, by the way, later. Speaking of things that have a lot of action, how is the Ann Arbor housing market doing, Liz?
That was sweet.
Got it in one.
Wow. That was like velvet.
Thank you.
Totally, like velvet. the Ann Arbor housing market is hot still. I mean, even though we're heading into sort of the slower time of the year, because Ann Arbor is a college town, you know, we stay pretty brisk through the fall. I consider fall almost as busy as spring in a lot of ways. Fall is a beautiful time to list your house. Houses look great in Michigan in the fall. And then it'll drop off in the wintertime as usual. But this past year has been just crazed. I mean, crazed. You know, we were back to writing offers on the hoods of cars.
Really?
At certain points, you know, just to get our buyers' offers in front of people. It was lots and lots and lots of bidding wars. Lots and lots. And I lost a few and won a few.
See, I mean, I bought a house, I think, 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
And we saw it one day. We put in an offer on it the next day.
Yeah.
And then they accepted it. And the next day they got two more offers.
Oh, yeah.
That was before like it really started cresting.
Mm-hmm. I think the crest really, at least based on what I get from Reinhart, which is the company that I work for, it really is about these last sort of 24 months, you know. It has just been up and up and up and busy, busy, busy. And areas like Ypsilanti are picking up nicely, which is great. I personally have sold 3 houses in Ypsilanti this year. You know, it's great. You know, there was bidding wars over houses in parts of Ypsilanti, you know, which is exciting.
Yeah, that is good.
So, Ann Arbor has just always been an expensive ticket, you know, into a house. And we all know that. But, you know, people love it and they want to come here. And it really spreads out to the outlying areas, Ypsi, Saline, Dexter, Chelsea, all of it.
Awesome. Well, Liz, your website is?
www.lizcrow.com, and the real estate tab is at the top alongside the book tab. So sometimes there's some crossover in there too. You never know.
Thanks for coming on. We'll see you in the next couple of weeks.
It's always fun to be here, gentlemen. Go blue.
Yeah. Thanks for Liz Crow for coming on to our show. As always, she's at lizcrow.com. We are MCO Radio, presented by Underground Printing and Mose, and we will be back with Steve Lorenz after this break. So as someone who reads MGO Blog, you're probably familiar with the fact that sometimes independent operators are much better than a cookie-cutter corporate operation. And our friend Matt Demarest is one of these guys. So he was working for a retail loan company, just didn't feel like they had the best interest of the customer in mind, struck out on his own, and now he's himself. He's Homesure Lending. It's just him. When I went through the loan process with him, for one, I got a great rate, and for two, I had his cell phone number. I had his email. I had his text. And whenever I needed something, he was on the phone in an instant. So that's not the kind of service you always get from everybody else. So my only real complaint is that Seth got a better rate than I did. It's terrible. But other than that, my experience with Matt was absolutely great. You can talk Michigan football with him and it will be wonderful instead of the boring conversation you'd have with anybody else. And if you do get a loan with him, he has a ticket deal going on, so 2 tickets to any football game, any basketball game, and you will have a satisfactory mortgage. Go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog or call 1-855-6-BE-SURE. 1-855-6-BE-SURE. In 1934, a salesman from Champion Sportswear walked into Moe's Sports Shop. There, he teamed up with George J. Moe to create the very first University of Michigan-branded shirt. After seeing the high demand for this product, Champion went to the other Big Ten schools with the same proposal, and the collegiate apparel industry was born. Moe's Sports Shops is celebrating 100 years of outfitting the Michigan faithful. Visit us at our original 1915 location at 711 North University or online at 100years.moe. That's 100years.moe.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Well, this is MGO Radio. For some reason, Jay-Z is playing this song.
We are presented by Underground Printing and Moe's, and this is not dad rock.
No, this is very not dad. Well, actually, it kind of is. Well, it's not dad rock.
No, it's okay. It's dad thing.
Yes.
All right, now that we've been completely thrown off by the man behind the glass, let's go to Steve Lorenz of 247.com. How you doing, Steve?
Maybe the Barney music was an indicator we'd be talking about Michigan's recent 2019 scholarship offer that they gave out this week. So apparently not, but, you know, I can roll with anything. You know, I wanted Jay-Z last week, but, you know, Barney it is apparently, so...
We can't use Jay-Z because we call the guy behind the glass Jay-Z, and he's really mad that a rapist took his lingo.
At this point, we'll find someone else.
It's a beef, I think. That's the term.
That is the term.
All right, Steve, you know what we're going to ask about. We're going to ask about Rashawn Gary. He was on a visit this weekend. Steve Wiltfong, who is one of your colleagues at 24/7, wrote up his visit and flipped his crystal ball to the old Block M. So
yep.
How's that going?
Yeah, I know the old crystal ball. You know, I would say this to add on to Steve's prediction. I called Steve this morning before he talked with Rashawn's mom. His exact quote going in was, "It's going to take something massive for me to flip my crystal ball away from Auburn." Apparently that happened. Michigan obviously killed the visit. You know, there's a few big factors I think that I know Steve learned and that I learned through the weekend. You know, they targeted the early official. I know a lot of people, myself included, usually you don't want to be the first official visit. Right now there's no indicator that Rashawn's even going to take five official visits. I know one thing Steve talked about after talking to his mom is that they're not necessarily enjoying, the process. It's starting to get a little tiring for them. That doesn't mean anything. He's still going to commit at the, Under Armour All-American game, I believe, in February, but, you know, that's one indicator why Michigan wanted to get in early, make sure they get him on campus again. And also, I know the big thing, and I think we may have even talked about this last week, they want to try to get him up again for an unofficial. His only other official visit scheduled right now is the Iron Bowl for Auburn, Alabama. If Auburn keeps taking a dump like they have so far this year, could see Michigan maybe kind of keeping in his ear about maybe coming up for the game. But academics, athletics, obviously he couldn't have chosen a better game defensively to go to. And the mom factor, mom loved it. The coaches and the staff was well prepared, you know, had everything ready, had all the answers ready for their questions. And, you know, it's really based on talking to Steve and talking to a couple of people I know, it's kind of hard not to be optimistic about it right now, to be honest with you.
And do you see any chance of the timeline moving? I mean, he seems like a guy who's going to take probably the whole process, but is there any movement there where Michigan might have made enough of a splash where he doesn't wait until the Iron Bowl to make a choice?
I don't think so. I mean, the thing is with him, again, being the number one guy, every school's going to keep throwing the kitchen sink at him. I think based on his personality and what his mom has repeatedly said, that they're going to wait till either the All-American game or maybe even National Signing Day. So I'd be surprised. I mean, again, Cruton, as we always say. But again, I, betting man, I would say that he waits until February.
So the other major official visitor this week was Carlo Kemp, a defensive end out of Colorado. Things seem to be looking pretty good for Michigan in that recruitment.
Yeah, Kemp, I think Michigan is in excellent position with Carlo. It's his second time on campus. Again, Michigan likes him at the buck spot. Is where they kind of prefer him. They like his toughness. They like his tenacity. They like his football family. I mean, he actually, Carlo Kemp is the nephew of, Chuck Pagano, who will leave the Indianapolis Colts this year and be replaced by what I'm hearing, either Mark D'Antonio or Brian Kelly. and, you know, so with him having that football family and on his side and just having that pedigree and stuff, I think he's a guy that the staff would love to get at that buck spot. Again, he's one of the most entertaining kids I've ever covered. I know you guys have maybe, when you do the roundups and stuff, I know Ace has probably written down some Chase Winovich quotes. He's the closest kid I've ever covered to Chase. He actually loves doing interviews. He loves talking about his experience and his visits and stuff. So he's always a lot of fun. But he loved Michigan. His exact quote is he fell in love with Michigan again. That was for the second time because he was there for the barbecue. He's going to take his official to Notre Dame, and I think that's on October 10th, I want to say. But it would be a surprise to me if, A, Notre Dame overtook Michigan, and, B, if he maybe didn't end things not too long after he visited Notre Dame. But he does want to give the Irish a fair shake. He's had that official set up for a while, so it'd be one of those two schools. If by some chance it's any other school, it's going to be Notre Dame besides Michigan.
Speaking of Notre Dame, one of Michigan's targets took a visit there this weekend, Jonathan Jones, a linebacker out of Florida who Michigan has led for a long time, maybe led too long, because it's one of those situations where if there's a leader for 6 months, then often that is not going to be the final destination, because for whatever reason he won't pull the trigger. And it does sound like Notre Dame made a lot of headway with him.
Correct, yeah, the Laquon Treadwell effect. I still think Michigan actually leads for Jones. He's been public the entire time about who his leader is. I know the, our people from Notre Dame caught up with him after his visit, made a comment about it was tempting to commit while he was on the visit, but the fact that he didn't is pretty strong. The other thing with him in Michigan is he actually rescheduled his official. He was going to make an official visit for the game in November, but is actually looking to visit in December. That raised some eyebrows, but I know actually with Steve Wolfong again, who talked to him after his Irish official visit, mentioned that the reason he's going to make that official after the season is because he wants both parents to come up with him to Michigan. So they may have kind of dodged a bullet with him not committing while on campus at Notre Dame. If Michigan's not full at linebacker, I guess is the best way to put it, by the time he makes that official visit, then I think Michigan's in good shape. But they have some other guys, some elite guys, I know that we may have talked about a little bit last week, on their board that are still, you know, potentially visiting, some guys that they really like a lot. So, you know, if they don't get Jones, I still think they're going to be fine at linebacker in the 16 cycle.
Yeah, I was going to piggyback off that and just ask kind of how you see the linebacker picture shaking out, because they do have, you know, a few elite guys that they're in on, and now it really looks like, I mean, Kemp is more defensive end than linebacker, but Kemp seems like he's going to be in the fold, and then there are only probably a couple spots still there for linebackers, so I wanted to know how you see those kind of shaking out.
Yeah, I mean, I think Devin Bush Jr. is a guy that still ends up at Michigan. You know, two of his teammates are already committed. I know we talked about those guys being maybe some of the couple of the unheralded recruits in this class that could eventually make an impact. Bush Jr. loved Michigan. The Michigan staff and the Flanagan staff have built a great relationship. I think, you know, maybe talked about it again last week, but Devin Bush's dad actually helped run one of the satellite camps. I think it was the one in Miami. You know, so there's a great relationship there. I think that they, his dad, you know, his dad being a former Florida State player, not just a player, but a great player at Florida State, hasn't really been pushing this on there. I mean, obviously it's always going to be an option, but I think it's a legit opportunity that they kind of pull the legacy out of there, you know, and beat Florida State head-to-head again for a big one. Caleb Kelly, I know we talked about him last week. They did well. I still think it's either Michigan or Oklahoma, but I still have a hard time not seeing him choose Oklahoma in the end. Dontavius Jackson's kind of the other guy who is a top 100-ish type kid, got offers from everybody. He's going to be an official visitor for the Ohio State game. He's kind of a mystery. I think Texas A&M, LSU is a school that has kind of come on late. Obviously, they've been playing some good football, so kids are noticing them. A&M's undefeated, too. You know, he's another guy, I think. You know, he came up for the spring game. I think Michigan feels like they're in pretty good shape with him, but again, he's a guy that they're going to have to, you know, close with, sort of. I mean, it's by far not a done deal with him.
So, good weekend for Michigan team-wise. What did you see that might be interesting, other than a complete total domination?
On the field?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the one thing I was kind of thinking about before you guys called was Harbaugh after the press, or after the game in the press conference, was really interesting to me. I know we kind of talked about how he is in the press conference room, but for the first time, I think, since I've seen him in any press conference, there was like a sense of like nostalgia. Asked him about the atmosphere and stuff, and he kind of got this weird, funny, like happy-ish look on his face, and like was thinking kind of almost like he was replaying certain points of the game in his head and the crowd noise in the stadium. You know, I think he's, I think, right now. I mean, the players talk differently after the games. They're obviously playing differently. It's just a very, they've done a great job of taking his and his staff's identity and, you know, kind of transferring it down to the players. And it's really resonated quickly. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's the best game I've covered since I've been doing this. I mean, I've been doing this, you know, during the dark ages, for the most part. But as far as being in the box, that was the best game I've seen a Michigan team play. And I think from a standpoint going forward, I don't really think you're going to see them play intimidated ball against a Michigan State or an Ohio State maybe that we've seen in the past. I think that they're going to come into those games ready to beat them up worse than those teams want to beat them up, you know, which I think really, especially against Michigan State, I think has been an issue the last 3 or 4 years. But just the identity transfer, I think, from what Harbaugh envisions to what actually happens on the field, I think it's happening a little bit quicker than any of us probably even thought.
Absolutely. And now that Michigan's kind of, they've been able to host some official visitors, kind of go through a few visit weekends with the new coaching staff in place, and you've been able to catch up with some of these guys after these visits, what are you hearing in terms of, is there a significantly different approach with these with the staff in terms of how they go about hosting visitors than Hoke's regime and previous coaching staffs in Michigan?
It's always different, but it's been, a lot of it's been similar, though. I mean, Hoke's big thing that always worked so well is he was always 100% honest with kids, almost to a fault. I mean, you look at the Sean Hand engineering thing. Pretty much told him, you know, you're going to have a really hard time succeeding at a high level, both in engineering and on the field, you know, at a school like Michigan. And but with Harbaugh, I think his love of Ann Arbor and his love for the Michigan, I think, has really actually been kind of one of the things that I maybe expected, but not from hearing it from so many different kids. I know one of the big things, especially in the off season before the official visit season even started, that was a big hit with the kids, is that he would actually take kids and walk them around campus. I think you guys remember the that weird rap vine with
yes.
Amir Mitchell and Upshur and stuff. I mean, you know, taking them, actually walking them around campus and, you know, telling stories about his experience there and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I think that's really resonated. You know, I think his football experience and his success on the field is what's getting kids there. But then it's that personal, his personal experience. And obviously, you know, for a lot of kids in Michigan, the campus, the school, the academics, the athletics speaks for itself. But, you know, they've really, to me, have made sort of a seamless transition, because I was always a big fan of the way Brady Hoke recruited. I thought he recruited really well, was really good at getting kids interested, and especially when they got on the campus. And I think for the most part, it's been a real similar thing. The MPAC program obviously has continued to be a huge, huge, huge thing with kids that, you know, the kids that want to do well in the classroom. And, you know, that's something that they've knocked out of the park again. That hasn't gone anywhere. So, you know, there's a little bit of differences with his prestige and all that kind of stuff. But I think as far as being honest, upfront, and also, you know, casual still, not being too, like, you know, pushy or whatever, I think has really resonated with a lot of top guys.
Now that we're about halfway through the high school football season, who are the guys in the 2017 Michigan class who seem to be making a move towards maybe national recruit status, or just guys who are going to be a battle between a Michigan and a Michigan State or a Notre Dame or a Ohio State?
Sure. First guy that pops into mind immediately is Donovan Peoples-Jones, the five-star wide receiver out of Cass Tech. He's a bona fide national guy pretty much already. I think he doesn't have all of them yet. Well, I say all of them, I mean pretty much anybody, but he's getting there. Michigan in good shape there. His dad went to school at Michigan. But again, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Michigan State, USC and Florida are two schools outside of the region maybe to watch with him. Detroit King's got a kid, Ambry Thomas, is a top 150 guy. He's got LSU, Tennessee, besides the regional schools. Speed is something Michigan really wants in the 17 class, and he is definitely a kid with speed. I mean, he's a guy that could play on either side of the ball. Michigan loves him, would love to pluck him out of King, which is a school they've had a hard time with the past 4 or 5 years. KJ Hamler, I know Ace knows a lot about KJ. I love watching KJ play football. He's under little undersized. I think he's like 5'8", 160-ish. He's a real small kid, but, man, he produces every time he's on the field. He's got Michigan State. He's got Michigan. Doesn't quite have Ohio State, Notre Dame-ish types yet, but I have a feeling that he'll start to elevate nationally also. Trying to think of who else. Jerayman Hall's another one, top 100 offensive lineman from Oak Park High School. Michigan, I think, has a pretty sizable lead in that one. Penn State's another school he likes. He could probably start for Penn State right now at offensive line. But Michigan, I think, has a pretty sizable lead there. I think he's waiting. I think in the summer we thought he may commit, but he may be waiting for Michigan State, Ohio State, Notre Dame. But it's actually a really good class. They've already offered the 9 guys. They're calling them the Pipeline 9, kind of a recruiting tactic to use. But the in-state product in Michigan is better in 17 than it has been the past few classes. So they're looking to get 5 or 6 of those guys at least, you know, if not, you know, what is it, God willing, the creek don't rise or whatever, they get all 9 of them. But yeah, those are the guys I think that really stand out as far as potential national recruits.
Yeah, I would very much agree with that list after catching most of these guys through the first few weeks of the football season. But Peoples-Jones has very much stood out. I saw Hamler on Friday for the second time this year.
Yeah, I know you love Hamler.
I really like Hamler. His team doesn't utilize him as much as they should, but sure. When he gets the ball, he is great. And he's also becoming a really impressive defensive prospect as well, actually. He is very physical for a small, skinny guy. And one guy that Steve didn't mention, I don't think, was Jalen Kelly-Powell, the safety out of Cass Tech, who I thought looked really good in the first week and seems like a guy. I think his recruitment shaping up as more of an in-state battle, I think. But
yeah, that was a guy who I think was very positive about Michigan very early.
Yes.
Seems like Michigan's in good with him.
So I've been impressed by a lot of those 2017 kids. And speaking of which, I wanted to ask Steve who he sees as kind of the next guy to join in, because one of the official unofficial visitors that they had last weekend was Kurt Taylor, the running back out of Georgia. And he's making rumblings that he might be thinking about a commitment pretty strongly. So it seems like it's about time for that class to start growing pretty soon.
Absolutely. I do think Kurt is a guy. For those who may not know who Kurt Taylor is, I would Google him, and he already looks like he's an NFL running back. Jim Harbaugh actually compared him to Frank Gore in terms of, you know,
praise.
He's a low to the ground tank that keeps his feet moving. I mean, you're recruiting, you're going to tell kids they look like guys that you've coached in the past. But I mean, there's a lot to like about him in Jim Harbaugh's offense. Kelly Powell actually is another guy who originally, and as far as I know, he's still sticking to it, wanted to commit to whatever school he chooses at the end of his junior season. So that'd be in the next, 2 months or so. If nobody happened to drop before then, I could see it being him. Jalen, he was named after Jalen Rose. His family's a big, big Michigan family. He's one I'd be really surprised if he didn't choose Michigan. I know he likes, you know, Ohio State actually offered him. I think Ohio State might be the one other school he really likes, but he's serious about academics too, which is another reason why Michigan is in a decent spot with him, because he's kind of a Duke, Northwestern, Stanford kid, kind of likes those schools a lot too, kind of wanted to see him, but I don't know if he will. So off the top of my head, those would be the two guys I would think of. I know quarterbacks always like to end it early, but I don't see Dylan McCaffrey or Davis Mills. I think those are the two top 2017 guys they're looking at quarterback. I don't foresee those guys ending it soon. So I think Taylor, Kelly Powell would be guys. Alan Stritzinger too, the De La Salle kid, 2017 in-state guy. Probably be running back or safety, could play a few positions. I think he's a guy that could commit to Michigan sometime before the end of the calendar year too.
Awesome. Steve, keep on sticking and moving in those press conferences and don't get tagged by Harbaugh.
Oh, man. I'm getting close to asking a question. We'll just put it that way. I'm so afraid of the depths there. He's very intimidating in there, and you don't, like I said, you don't know what kind of questions to ask him. So, I almost feel like I got to come in with a preset question that I'll probably spend way too much time trying to figure out, and then it'll probably blow up in my face anyways. So,
why don't you just ask him to talk about something? That seems to go very well.
Right? Yeah, I know that's say that. I should ask him if he thinks Joe Flacco is an elite quarterback. was something I was thinking about asking him too, just to see what he'd have to say about that. But
ask him if ask him if Michigan's defense is at the Joe Flacco level.
I'd be interested to hear his response. Sure, he's heard the Joe Flacco elite stuff plenty with his brother coaching there. But he's first to compliment him though. I know he's real high on the defense and was especially seen in an especially good mood at today's presser. Apparently, I wasn't there, but was told that by a couple guys. So,
well, him and everybody else. Yeah. All right. Thanks for coming on, Steve. It's always great to have you.
Absolutely, guys. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
Definitely. All right, that was Steve Lorenz of 24/7. I didn't ask him about the deal that they're doing. They are doing a deal where it's free until the end of the year, and 24/7 is just tweeting it out that they have the most signups of anyone on their site. So I wonder why.
Yeah.
So go to wolverine.247.com and get the deal.
Yeah, and also follow Steve, Tremendous UM on Twitter. Yeah, he's a worthwhile follow.
He is, very much so, and obviously tremendously knowledgeable.
Ah, see what you did there.
About Michigan recruiting. Ace, it's another sports-themed podcast-type radio show. What does that mean?
DraftKings.
It does mean DraftKings. This is our Fantasy Minute. Ace, I need your guy. Your guy for this week.
I'm happy this week because I get to choose a Michigan player. Because Michigan plays Maryland, and Maryland is not good at football this year.
Correct.
And so they gave up 304 yards on 59 carries to West Virginia last week. So after what Devon Smith did on Saturday, I'm going to go ahead and say, health permitting, he is the play. And he was walking around pretty fine after the game on Saturday. Yeah. So he said he was going to be a full go. So I'd expect him to put up some numbers.
Not a man whose soreness seems like it will slow down.
No.
All right. So I was going to take Devon Smith, but then you totally Wally Pitt me there.
I did.
So I have to go with a different guy who I think might be undervalued because he hasn't been really producing in the last couple of weeks. But Braxton Miller goes up against Indiana.
And that sounds like a recipe for touchdowns.
And, this is a situation where you get to play him at wide receiver, but he's going to probably get a number of wildcat snaps. And that is a very appealing prospect for someone who is going up against the Indiana defense.
Yeah, always nice to get contributions from multiple phases. And Braxton Miller should be able to provide some of that.
So to cash in on our wonderful suggestions, go to DraftKings.com, use the code MGOBLOG, and you will be entered in to a $1 million contest. All right, we're going to take a break. Howden Ann Arbor, we will get to you next. This is MGO Radio, presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. If you need tickets, and I know you do, you should go to TickIQ. That is T-I-Q, I-Q, just T, and then I-Q, and then I-Q. What they do is they take all the tickets that are listed online, find the cheapest ones, and often you'll have sales. So if you type in MGO blog, 10% off. TickIQ.com, TIQIQ.com. So as someone who reads MGO blog, you're probably familiar with the fact that sometimes independent operators are much better than a cookie cutter corporate operation. And our friend Matt Demarest is one of these guys. So he was working for a retail loan company, just didn't feel like they had the best interest of the customer in mind. Struck out on his own, and now he's himself. He's Homesure Lending. It's just him. When I went through the loan process with him, for one, I got a great rate. And for two, I had his cell phone number. I had his email. I had his text. And whenever I needed something, he was on the phone in an instant. So that's not the kind of service you always get from everybody else. So my only real complaint is that Seth got a better rate than I did. It's terrible. But other than that, my experience with Matt was absolutely great. You can talk Michigan football with him, and it will be wonderful instead of the boring conversation you'd have with anybody else. And if you do get a loan with him, he has a ticket deal going on, so two tickets to any football game, any basketball game, and you will have a satisfactory mortgage. Go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog or call 1-855-6-BE-SURE. 1-855-6-BE-SURE.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Back to Endo Radio, presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. I am Brian Cook. This is Ace Anbender, about to speak right now.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, I did that before. I think you could come up with something better this time.
I know. I still just wasn't prepared, I guess.
Okay.
You know. Execution will be better next week.
The Brady Hoke of radio shows right here. You're the Brady Hoke of radio shows.
That
you just
harsh,
said the execution
man.
Would be better next week.
I was kidding.
Well.
You know.
I hope you're not kidding.
The execution will be better next week. I expect not to be called the Brady Hoke of radio ever again.
Well, we do have another nickname for you if you'd prefer that.
I think I'm good on that one, too.
Let's go to the phones. Howard in Ann Arbor. Howard? Sorry, Dennis in the OC. How you doing, Dennis?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you and Ace doing?
I'm doing well.
It sounds like it. And of course, we have just great Engel history. I was thinking about the ad for the Moe's Sports Shop that you guys run. So 1934, Michigan had just won two straight national championships. I don't know what the point in the calendar the fellow went into the store there to propose the idea of the shirt. But, of course, 1934 was a disastrous season. The team went into the doldrums for 4 years after those back-to-back national championship seasons. But nonetheless, building on the enthusiasm that had already occurred, they came up with the idea for the shirt. And then, you know, that's also quite interesting that among the many firsts, apparently, so the first collegiately themed apparel for people to buy at a store was for Michigan.
It's not a huge surprise, given all the Canham stuff and the fact that Michigan is obviously the number one brand right now in terms of money from whatever company you'd like to give, just kind of goes to show how far back that goes, the fact that Michigan and the Block M is a big deal.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the history, it was a big deal, really, even before Yost got here, and then Yost got here, and it all took off in a way that is just excellent. And, you know, there are some people that think we're getting a little bit carried away with ourselves, but who cares? Who gives a darn? Oh, those Wolverines took the field this Saturday afternoon, Ace and Brian, and they nullified those Cougars from BYU. They said, we've got the rightful remedy for which had the Michigan fans down. It was great defense from start to finish. 90 yards of total offense for the opposition with less than a minute to go. Are you kidding me? And then how about that offense? Oh, no way. Oh, Devion Smith electrified the maize and blue heart, just like Amara Darbo did on that pass reception. Shades of Charles Woodson up there on East Lansing. Oh, that offensive line showing their improvement. The quarterback play showing improvement. And look at the way he kicked the ball, took it under his arm there, and just go around the end for those two touchdowns. Oh, shades of the guts and blue of the maize and blue. Those Wolverines aren't going to be stopped. They're picking them up and they're laying them down. We're seeing all phases of the game improving week by week by week. And now it's off to Maryland for some crab cakes and a great big victory out there under the lights against those Terrapins. Oh, it's going to be turtle soup, I'll tell you. And those Wolverines are going to be improving week by week here in this, the 2015 inaugural season of the Jim Harbaugh career here at coaching those Wolverines, those maize and blue defenders of Western civilization. Let's go, Blue. Hail to the victors at MGO Radio.
Thank you, Dennis. Always a treat. Let's go back to the phones. This time, Howard in Ann Arbor, let's give this a second try. How you
hey,
doing?
Guys. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Man, I got to follow that. Woo! Man, you got me fired up. Got a good question, guys. I've been looking at the recruiting, you know, just looking at where the guys are from and then that sort of thing. I noticed that we've been shut out of Ohio. Is that, what's going on there? Is there something going on with the coaches? Because I know the whole, you know, coaches can be very territorial, very regional. What's going on there? Is the talent is just low in Ohio or what?
I think it's a combination of a few things. One, it is not a great class this year in the state of Ohio. For two, it's obviously very difficult to recruit against Ohio State right now in their home state. And for three, Michigan State is actually doing really well in Ohio for the first time in a long time because their recruiting is finally catching up to the results on the field. Mark D'Antonio, clearly an Ohio State guy.
Yeah, and I would also say there's another factor coming into play here, which is Ohio State has been great at filling classes early the past couple of years. I mean, they're already way ahead in the 2017 team rankings. They got out to a massive lead on that because they pulled in like eight relatively blue chip recruits, and a lot of those guys were in state guys. So with Harbaugh coming in and kind of playing from behind, I mean, he's still catching up 2017 is going to be kind of the first class where he even got remotely the same start on contact with these recruits as Urban Meyer and Mark D'Antonio did. So between the down year kind of for Ohio recruiting, the fact that Harbaugh did such a good job of diving into Florida, diving into Alabama, going all around the country to get these guys, there just wasn't really a guy who stuck out as somebody that they needed to pull out of there.
It's something that would be a concern long term. Like, Michigan needs to get some guys out of Ohio. Obviously, Jake Butt is from Ohio, Taco Charlton. They need to get a couple of four-star type guys out of that state on a pretty regular basis, just because they're there for the taking. And if Michigan is going to compete with Ohio State in the recruiting realm, they have to do well at home. They have to steal a couple guys out of Ohio, and then they have to do a good job nationally.
Absolutely, and I think they'll be able to cover all three of those things once Harbaugh gets up to speed. But right now, they're already doing a pretty decent job. I mean, this is a solid class that they're putting together for 2016, but it would be nice for them to start plucking a couple guys out of Ohio, especially since, well, this is a down year. I mean, that is a state that is going to produce a lot of talent year in and year out.
It is. And we keep bringing this up, and this is probably the last few months that we'll be able to do this, but Michigan was coming from farther behind than most college coaches were, just because so much of their staff came direct from the NFL. And that's a nice thing, right? Because every staff came direct from the NFL. That's good. But it also puts you a little bit behind in terms of relationships, and recruiting is about relationships.
Yeah, and not just with the players themselves, but with coaches at these high schools. I mean, a lot of times those are the most important relationships. And for guys who are in the NFL, they're not cultivating those while they're there.
Exactly.
So it might take a little bit of time before Michigan's stealing guys from Ohio that Ohio State really wants. I mean, because Michigan's already offered six guys in the 2017 class out of Ohio, and three of them have already committed to Ohio State.
I see. I mean, I think long term they do have guys that can go in there and get players out. DJ Durkin was a Bowling Green guy at first and coached in the state, obviously is going to be one of their main go-to guys when they go back there. So they have guys who can go get recruits from.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Tyron Wheatley extends his reach a little bit outside the borders of Michigan and starts developing some relationships down in Ohio.
Yeah. I mean, they have Florida guys. They have a Louisiana guy in Greg Jackson. They have California guys in, I don't know, Jim Harbaugh himself.
It's a pretty good one.
And Tim Drevno. So they've got a good coverage of most of the major areas for recruits except for Texas.
Yeah. I mean, that is the one area. And they're actually doing a pretty decent job of at least making some headway on good Texas recruits.
They're
too.
In on some guys too, so. But Michigan has never really done that well in Texas. They get the occasional guy out of there, but not that many.
Yeah, I mean, there are just so many programs down there that are quality that it is tough to get guys outside of the near reaches. Because it's, I mean, even with the amount of talent in Texas, and even with the University of Texas imploding, it's still tough to kind of pull guys out of there.
All right, one final break, and then we will get you to the Jim Harbaugh show, but we've got a special treat for you. We're going to talk about the 49ers on the other side of this one. So this is MGO Radio presented by Underground Printing and Moe's. In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Eufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Ace, how you doing?
Doing pretty well.
This is an ad break in a sports-themed show. What does that mean?
That means DraftKings.
It does mean DraftKings. So what I like about DraftKings is that you're not competing against the house. You're competing against other people. And as we know, other people are often Ohio State fans and therefore not very smart. DraftKings does a great job of projecting values and thus making the games fair.
If you're listening to this later this week, the college football contest should be up. But for now, you can go to a free NFL contest for $1 million. $1 million. Just go to DraftKings.com, sign up with the code MGOBLOCK.
Sports Talk 1050 WTKA.
Welcome back to MGO Radio, presented by Underground Printing at Moe's. I'm Brian Cook. This is Ace Anbender,
who actually has something to say this time.
Good. Yeah. Well done, Ace. We have a Twitter question from Aaron Lewis. It says, I think Drake Johnson will play a lot more as the season goes on because he brings something demonstrably different. Thoughts?
I mean, okay. I could see it, but I just think Devion Smith fits so well with what Harbaugh wants a running back to do that unless either he gets hurt or puts together a string of underwhelming performances. I mean, we already see him emerge. I was a little bit surprised that he was the clear-cut lead back against BYU, considering it's UNLV. You know,
after Smith went out.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw Derek Green get some more carries. Yeah. Ty Isaac only got two carries after a 100-yard game.
But it seems like the running back distribution is very clearly, at this point, Smith and then everybody else.
Yeah. I don't see that changing. If people are going to get more snaps, I think it's because Drake Johnson, you know, we saw him targeted on a swing pass 2 weeks ago. We saw him actually complete one in this game, get 20 yards. That's going to be the kind of thing that Michigan is going to want to use him for, because when he's out on the edge, he is faster than Devion Smith.
Yeah, and a more natural pass catcher, I would say, as well.
Yeah, so I think the main hangup for Drake Johnson is going to be his pass blocking.
Yeah, and we have seen him miss a couple of cuts where...
We have, but that's not exactly unique.
No, it's not.
But Drake Johnson has been a decent pass blocker so far in this career. But I think one of the underrated aspects of Devion Smith's game so far is the fact that he's been a great pass blocker.
Yeah, he's been taking some guys out. And most of the issues with pass protection have been with missed blitz pickups that would be a line call or a quarterback's call.
So if he can get to parity with Devion there, then I think you might see him kind of emerge into a obvious third down back, which is a nice thing to have, not only because it gives you some more variety, but it also takes some wear and tear off of Smith.
Yeah, and with Michigan style of offense, where a lot of times it's going to be run pass, you're in plenty of third down and short situations where that guy's going to come in really handy.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's do it. Let's talk 49ers.
Let's go. Do you want to hear the total yardage?
Yes.
It is something.
Give it to me.
So first of all, they lost an NFL game 47-7, which that is not a score you see in the NFL at all.
And the total, and you're a Lions fan. You know this.
I know. I mean, I've seen some things, and that still struck me as unusually bad. Arizona outgained San Francisco 446-156.
Oh, my God.
It's worse than you thought, isn't it?
When's the last time an NFL team tripled up another NFL team?
You know, I don't have the capability to look that up right now, but I'm not guessing it was any time too recently.
That's amazing. And then after the game, Tyrann Mathieu, a nickelback for the Cardinals, just dropped a bomb, just kind of talking offhand about the new 49ers.
Yeah, because he's seen them both. And he says that the passing scheme is just so much more simple that they knew what was coming. It was the kind of quote that you would hear about Michigan when Brady Hoke was the head coach. And since Jim Tomsula may be Brady Hoke with a fake mustache, things are starting to get pieced
highly
together
possible.
Here. They might have hired Brady Hoke.
It's just like you didn't think that the bottom was going to drop out so fast. One of the other things that was hilarious in retrospect is before the game, Colin Kaepernick said something to the effect of, I feel like I can really play like myself now.
And here is Colin Kaepernick as himself, passing for 67 yards on 19 attempts with no touchdowns and four interceptions.
Two of which were pick sixes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess do you, but that's...
No, don't do that.
Yeah.
Maybe, don't do you.
Maybe don't.
Maybe not.
He's got an incentive-laden contract, too. They were actually really smart about how they put that one together.
Oh, that's
so
good.
He needs to play well to get paid.
Harbaugh probably put that contract together.
I'm guessing he had some input there. So, having four interceptions against only nine completions seems like something that should maybe change. Maybe not be yourself if that's going to be what you do.
I've started trolling the Niners Nation message boards just because I can't help myself. It's been so long since I could go get Schadenfreude from opposing fans or NFL fans of a team that was
formerly in possession of Jim Harbaugh.
You're not going to like to hear the beginning of this, but you will appreciate by the end. My brother has joined my fantasy football league for the first time this year. And Carlos Hyde is one of his primary running backs, San Francisco's running back. Yeah. We all remember him from being just a monster at Ohio State.
Yeah.
And if the Niners had anything resembling a pulse this year, he was going to be a high-value fantasy back.
Yeah, because Gore's gone, and that's what... And
being the lead back in fantasy is such a huge thing. And we've got the Red Zone channel at home, so we're just kind of going through our fantasy experience with that. My brother has not quite learned how to ride the wave of, like, it's going to be a lot of ups and downs when you're watching fantasy football kind of play out live in front of you. And the San Francisco game is on, and he's just getting beside himself. He's walking in and out of the room.
Wait, he's... Why is he...
Because Carlos Hyde's on his team and
I understand that San Francisco is not good, but to like get up and pace around because your fantasy football team is not.
It's
doing
his first
well.
Year. He doesn't know how to handle the week to week. Like,
do you play checkers with him? Does he like?
We
throw
play
the
poker. He doesn't do that.
He doesn't.
No, he's actually pretty chill. But he can. How much can he get into it?
Like, how much money is at stake in this league?
It's a $50 buy-in.
A $50 buy-in for a season.
Yeah. It's pretty cheap, all things considered.
Like, I was wondering, like, maybe you guys had a gambling problem.
No, we aren't super high stakes. We play $5 poker games and $50 fantasy football. We're not crazy high stakes.
I kind of wish that you did have a gambling problem, because then that would make his behavior more sensible.
That is true. So anyway, to get to the end of the story.
I don't wish that you had a gambling problem.
Yeah, no, thanks for that. my brother's in the kitchen, and he calls in and asks how Hyde is doing. And at that moment, Hyde gets tackled for a safety. And all I could do was go, well, he's in the end zone. Which my brother did not really appreciate.
No.
But
he stabbed you with a fork because he doesn't know what to do about fantasy football.
Yeah, I've avoided being stabbed so far. He's not as crazy as he's probably sounding like in this segment. He's way more calm than me when we watch sports. So, but this is... Fantasy football is such a different beast, man.
It's not. It's just.
It is.
It's just a game.
You have a personal investment in the whole thing. And when you're playing all of your friends, then the trash talking becomes something you have to prepare for. And
I think
we're not afraid to deal with that a little bit.
I think season long fantasy football is stupid, but daily fantasy is very good.
You have no
go to DraftKings.com, MCOblog. That's good. That's good radio.
Yeah, that was well done.
Yeah.
Now the plug-in.
Now the sponsor is happy with us, I hope.
Maybe.
Well, you never know about these things. Do we have any other amazing 49ers things?
I mean, have we mentioned that they got tripled up on yardage in an NFL game?
Because, yes, we did.
Because, my goodness.
Is Jim Tomsula still the all-time winningest coach in San Francisco 49ers history?
No.
No.
No, he is not.
He's probably second, though.
No, they're 1-2 now. He has dropped below 500. He's now closing in on the bottom of that list.
Okay, so like third, behind Walsh and behind Harbaugh, it could be him.
It could be him.
Could be him.
George Seifert and then him.
George Seifert. What does that even mean? Is that a name?
That's a man who I think the translation is piggybacking off of Bill Walsh's success.
Ah,
yeah.
I see. I bought that shirt, by the way.
Tomsula shirt. It's wonderful.
The SB Nation, it was like a $30 shirt too. I was just like, ugh, fine. They've got a shirt which is just Tomsula screaming bludgeon, bludgeon, bludgeon,
you
bludgeon.
You can't put a price on Schadenfreude.
No. I'm gonna wear it in San Francisco like 10 years from now, and people are gonna give me funny looks.
You will get beat to death on the street if you do that. Have you seen the fights that happen outside of their stadium? People get like...
Yeah, but I won't be near their stadium.
Yeah, don't do that. Francisco. Don't do that. Yeah, that's true. They did just bump that up to Santa Clara like some idiots.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
I think that Jed York is my favorite Notre Dame alum of all time. I don't think there's even a competition.
I was about to say, who's running second?
Tom Hammond? I don't think he's an alum. Tom Hammond is a good announcer.
His face terrifies me. I'm sorry.
Well, yes, but you're not looking at his face. You're hearing his sonorous and dulcet tones.
That is true.
He did the game.
Yeah.
I got an email from a Notre Dame fan who emailed me to thank me because he thought I was Tom Hammond. It was amazing.
That's a new one.
It was like, I don't know what brought him to, but I think it must have been the picture.
Yeah.
Because we keep posting the picture. And then we brought it up with House Rock Built whenever we had our our thing every year.
I wonder where that kid is who got the Tom Hammond tie.
I think he's probably in Congress by now.
Yeah, I mean, clearly just on the path to tremendous success.
Man, Jim Tomsula. That guy. Like, why would you, that's a higher on the level of Tim Beckman, where it's just like, what are you even thinking?
Yeah, because those players get paid. Like, that is a professional operation.
That is a professional operation, or at least it purports to be one. All right, I think we are out of time. We'd like to thank our sponsors, UGP and Moe's, DraftKings, Liz Crow for coming by, Homesure Lending, TickIQ, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and of course, Steve Lorenz of 24/7 for coming on the show and being so dang knowledgeable. And we would also like to thank Jed York for being himself.
Yeah, just do you, Jed.
Inside Michigan Football with one Jim Harbaugh is coming up right after this show, so stay tuned. You'll probably get to hear what's happening. This is MGO Radio, sponsored by Underground Printing and Moe's.
Who's got it better than us?
No!